As you know, MUFON has a new international director. He's Clifford Cliff, and he's on the line with us right now. Cliff, or I guess it's Clifford, right? I love that. You're not in Denver, though, are you?
Jerry, I'm in Greeley, Colorado.
Oh, okay, I know where it is.
Oh, do you?
So you're actually the director now. You took over earlier in February, I believe.
I am as of last week.
So you actually spent the week before Valentine's Day and this week settling into the job, I guess.
Slowly, but yes. It's a great job. It's a big job. I didn't realize how, even though I've been on the board of directors, I didn't realize how much work the ID had to do.
Well, I guess that's why James Carrion, your predecessor, only wanted to serve the one term, huh?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, James had some business situations and family situations he needed to address, and he needed to move on to those, take care of personal matters. So we decided that then I could be the the board of directors decided that I would be the international director. And
now, Clifford, contrary to a lot of rumors, you're no stranger to MUFON. You've been around that organization for a while,
yes,
right?
Yes, I've been on the board of directors about 8 years and came on with John Schuessler and Jan Harzan and Dr. Bob Wood. Came on about 8 years ago.
John Schuessler. I like him. Do you see him often? I think he's still around.
John, I talk to at least once or twice a week, and I see him about once a month. He is a magnificent human being. He just is wonderful.
I'm sure John was all the things you just mentioned. What we liked about him was he was always available, or at least willing to talk to us about anything that came up. Hope you'll do the same thing. John was quite a guy, and is quite a guy.
That's the way he is. I have never met a more open person, honest and straightforward as John Schuessler.
Okay, you're taking over for James Carrion, and James did some pretty good technical things for sure that I know of. I mean, it looks to me like you guys are headed in the right direction.
James did some. He brought us to the 21st century with the computer technology and all of the things that are needed for us to work in this field, and he's done an excellent job with that. I see myself, Jerry, as moving forward with MUFON, trying to be a centrist. When I say that, what I mean is, on one hand, we have the people that are the nuts and bolts of the UFO. The machine's got to be right there in front of you before it's a valid consideration of the existence of the UFO. On the other hand, clear on the other side, we approach the paranormal side of the UFO phenomenon. Now, in my opinion, they are all both, from all the way across the spectrum, have valid considerations that we need to investigate. And hopefully we'll be able to do that. As a matter of fact, the symposium this year, we are going to have, the theme is going to be the cutting edge of UFO investigations, and we will have the abduction people, we'll have crop circles, and we will have the hard evidence about UFO machines.
Well, you know, I always have thought of myself, Clifford, as a nuts and bolts guy. I want to knock on the door of the saucer and interview somebody in there, but there's more to it.
There's something going on that we just don't have the capability with our limited intelligence to get a handle on it. I've done brainwave trainings with Dr. Bob Schellenberger and Judy Green, the daughter of Elmer Green from the Menninger Institute in Topeka, Kansas. And there are some things that happen. People believe they might be paranormal. I don't know if they are. I think they might be just another aspect of our mind that we haven't been able to really get a grasp of yet. So we can't rule that part of it out.
Okay, now, the MUFON symposium this year is moving back to Denver. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, it is, Jerry. July 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Bud Hopkins, Linda Moulton Howe, going to be there, and Nick Redfern. We have pretty good cast that will try to cover all of the aspects of the UFO phenomenon.
Okay, Clifford Cliff, let's let the audience know who you are as a person. Kind of flesh out your personal life for us, if you don't mind. How did you get interested in UFOs and why?
Jerry,
Well, can you answer that?
Yeah, I can, because it started significantly back in the early 50s during the Ground Observer Corps days. You may not be old enough to remember that.
Well, I'm old enough, but explain it to the audience.
Back in the early 50s, the U.S. Air Force was setting up Ground Observer Corps spots across the United States. And as I recall and remember, they were setting it up to develop better radar techniques to see if, in fact, what they were seeing on radar was actually what they were seeing. And I was out in northeastern Colorado in a little town, and my grandmother, who volunteered me for everything, a 14-year-old boy, you know how that goes. And so they called the alert, and we went out to the site. It was in the evening. It was supposed to be from the 8 to 10 tour of duty for that night. They called the alert. We went out, and then you reported the airplanes high, whether it was a jet or a prop, what direction it was going, estimated speed, estimated altitude, and that type of thing, and you would call in your reports. Strange thing is, I still remember our call signs, Bravo Lima Red 1. Anyway, that night I was standing out there, and there were some high fluffy clouds moving across the sky, and there was a full moon just coming up in the east. All of a sudden, off to the southeast, I saw this movement, and I looked up, and here came this object across the sky. It was about the size of the moon. It had something coming off of the back of it, like fire or sparks or something, but not very long. It was very close to the object. It wasn't leaving a long trail. It was just almost a part of it. And it zipped clear across the sky very quickly. To this day, I still shudder and quiver when I think about it, but we called it in, and they bumped us up three or four people before some major said, well, that's what we were looking for. You guys can go home. So I knew it wasn't an airplane. I knew it wasn't a helicopter. And, of course, satellites were not of consequence at that time. So I had no idea. It was a UFO as far as I was concerned. I have no idea what it was, but it didn't take long for it to move clear across the sky.
The major indicated that he already knew about it. You confirmed
that's it. What he indicated. He said, well, that's what we're looking for. You can go home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That piqued my interest, Jerry. And got me going. And then, of course, into high school, I wasn't thinking that much about him because I was more interested in sports and girls.
I'm the same here, but it was girls and sports.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, yeah, okay. So then I went to college, and of course, I retained interest in it and talked to people about it from time to time, but it wasn't a burning thing in me like
right.
It is today. And then I went into, I was drafted during 62, during the Vietnam era, and went into the Army Security Agency as a communications intelligence operator stationed in Ethiopia. Never saw anything in the CIA reports or that type of thing. I had a top secret crypto clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw anything pertaining to UFOs, so there was that didn't happen, but I was always looking. Then, of course, you get married and start going, and then I had the time to start getting involved with it and started reading articles, Flying Saucer Review and some of the books of Hynek and Springfield and the guys that know about it.
Right.
Piqued my interest. Then I had another sighting out here where I live. I spent 35 years, Jerry, in as a real estate person. I had developments. I developed affordable housing, some 500 single-family units and thousands of lots. And I had four real estate offices and some 75 real estate agents that I was taking care of. So I had offices, four offices, two in Greeley and one out in eastern Colorado and one in Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
So that that kept me quite busy. But after the 35 years, I still continued to keep my interest in the UFO field. And then as I got toward the end of retirement, when I, my wife and I decided we wanted to raise Christmas trees, that was probably at a weaker moment in my life. So I we started raising some Christmas trees, and we still are. But I, we live out in the country, and one evening, Jerry, this one really got me going. I'd already, this was about 5 years ago. I went out of the backyard or the side of the house about 10:30 one night, and we live a mile south of the Greeley Airport. So I see a lot of airplanes coming in and out, nothing too big, but small airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Off to the east, I saw this orange light on the horizon. I thought, well, that's an airplane running lights. I stood there and watched it for a while, and not very long, like 15, 20 seconds, and it just kept coming. And it wasn't any red or green, it was orange. And the closer it got to be about the size of a penny at arm's length.
Uh-huh.
And it appeared to be to the north, right over. We just, there is a top secret NORAD facility at this airport under the Air Army or the Air National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
That they have just had there for about 7 years now. So it was flying right over that area. Well, I knew it wasn't a satellite because they don't go from east to west. It was orange, and it appeared as if it was moving with some difficulty, but it was still maintaining exactly the same speed.
Clifford, are you saying this thing was wobbling?
No, it wasn't wobbling. It was like it was having, it was trying to maintain, it would slow up just a little bit and then speed up. So
mm-hmm.
Just kind of to try to maintain a certain speed.
Okay.
And it just, I stood there mesmerized. I couldn't even go in and get my wife or get the camera. which happens, I guess, to a lot of people that see things. So anyway, it went on over. Well, I got to thinking, well, it's, what is that? It's hell, no sound, and it wasn't, it was, I was within a mile of it easily. It was under the clouds, and it went right straight over the top of Greeley and disappeared into the haze. So I don't know. It would appear to me that when it reached the mountains, it would have had to have gone up in altitude to get over them because it was that low.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at 4,500 feet, and the mountains go up to another 10,000 feet. Well, not quite 10,000, but 9,500 feet. So I knew it would have had to have climbed over those if it had kept going in that at that altitude. That really excited me because it was the typical orange color, and it was low altitude, and it was no sound. I do have a two million candle watt flashlight. I didn't even have the time to think about or even take it out and shine it on it to see if I could get a response. So that's obviously kept my interest piqued in this phenomenon, and it wasn't paranormal or anything else. It was a physical object.
Mm-hmm. To this day, you probably still think about it. I wonder what that was.
Oh, yes. I still, this increases my desire to investigate what this phenomenon's about.
Your title is International Director, and that's really true. MUFON is an international director. It's around the world now.
Right.
MUFON's done some tremendous changes. I like this real-time reporting. I heard you were going to change that back or something, delay it?
No, I don't know that we will.
Okay.
We had that contract with Bass Aerospace for 10 months, which ended at the end of January, and we will be reevaluating. Bass and MUFON will evaluate the results of that to see whether we want to continue or not. And it's been really exciting to be able to do that because it has increased our sighting reports significantly. We're averaging somewhere around 500 sighting reports a month. Now, that's not to George Filer or to Davenport with the UFO Reporting Center and the others, so we know there's significant amount going on.
So MUFON's getting 500 a month.
Uh-huh.
You know, adding it all up, and we talked about this on one of our shows recently, I would say there's about 1,000 reports a month coming in now.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that. But yeah, the strange thing, I've seen statistics from surveys that were run, and only 10% of the people report sightings. So if we're up to 20%, let's just say it's 20% reporting now. My goodness, the numbers of things going on are significant.
Has the role of MUFON changed somewhat? I mean, originally, weren't you just a reporting apparatus, reporting sightings?
Well, no, we have always been, our mission statement is the analytical and scientific investigation of the UFO phenomenon for the benefit of humanity. So we try to investigate to find out what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes you can, to give you an example, Jerry, this is was a strange case. We had some people that said every night about 10 o'clock, oh, this was over in Fort Collins, Colorado, they said about 10 o'clock every night, they see this V-shaped white objects, or that they're flying in a V formation, excuse me, flying across Fort Collins.
And it was on a regular basis?
Yeah. So we thought, well, okay. That's very interesting. So James Carrion went over and investigated that sighting. Well, I told him what it was because they happen to do that. We have white pelicans that are around this area in the summer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And when they fly, they are huge. They are a big bird. And they're white. And when they fly low, and they'll fly at night. Well, the reflection of the lights off the city gives it the aura of discs flying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we discovered what that was. And through our investigative techniques, that it was talking with the Game and Fish Department and various other people over there. I really knew what it was because I see them out here at my place at night.
So these white pelicans fly the same route all the time?
Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Uh-huh.
And they will, in the summer, they will get in the air currents and they start going in a circle until they get up extremely high. Well, look, when they start getting up higher, the sun shines off of them in the daytime,
yeah,
and it looks like discs making a circle. And then they disappear, and then they come back. So this is what we're trying to do, is to eliminate the natural phenomenon, the astral phenomenon, and astronomical phenomenon. And so we can get to the bottom of a lot of them, but I'm telling you, Jerry, there are so many of them that are just, we cannot come up with a scientific reason for those objects being there or what they're doing.
I notice that the few events I've been around, MUFON seems to be actively soliciting new members.
Jerry, that's what drives our organization. The more members we get, the more information we can get out to the public.
So anyone can go over to your website and join?
Our website,
uh-huh.
And $45 a year is our membership for U.S. citizens, and they get a journal once a month with articles from George Filer, Bud Hopkins, just all types of great people. Stanton Friedman writes wonderful articles every month. So we have a good response to that, and we're always updating the information and trying to make the journal better. We have a new editor, Larry Rimbert, and we now have an editorial committee of the board of directors, three of them, John Schuessler, Tom Dooley, and Rob Switak. They evaluate and make sure we don't get you know, sometimes people want to put articles in there that probably aren't very good.
Yeah, I understand.
So we have to evaluate that. But the journal and the membership has just been outstanding, and we're up to about 3,000 members and about 1,500 trained investigators. And at our symposium this year, Jerry, we have investigator training. We have individuals that train them in how to investigate mutilations, crop circles, how to investigate a landing, trace landing. Ted Phillips was here last year, has some great stuff and great training techniques for new investigators. So we really do try to get them off on the right foot and how to be careful, because they get close to one of these machines, there does seem to be radioactivity from time to time, and or maybe something biological that's being emitted. So we have to take great care when it's a very close sighting, as to a landing especially, as to how we have our investigators go out. Chuck Modlin is retired from Livermore Labs.
Yes.
And he's helping us. He knows every gadget in the world for measuring radioactivity, magnetism, and all types of things. So we're able to really be able to determine from this BATH program, too. We got a lot of the equipment we needed to take out on these spatial investigations.
Well, now, on that START team, Clifford, they are pretty fast. They show up sometimes within 24 hours. I mean, I've had several reports that they show right up.
We were hoping to have our START team members there within 24 hours of a major sighting.
And as far as the future of the STAR team, you may or may not continue that program. I don't guess you know yet.
We don't, because we're still evaluating the information that we got over the 10 months to see if there is some correlation or something specific that we maybe need to address closer, or a certain type of sighting that would be more significant that we don't know about as
of
now.
Your own personal opinion, Clifford, about these sightings, the percentage, I mean, 20%, that many unexplained? Do you know?
Jerry, for a long time I thought it was 20 to 30, but I'm thinking it's closer to probably 10 to 15.
Uh-huh. Well, now, I mean, radiation is not always being reported.
No, it's not. We have discovered many times when there was just the normal radiation background that's around a sighting. But sometimes people get very sick, like in the Cash Landrum incident that John Schuessler wrote so eloquently about.
Mm-hmm.
There was radiation that the lady did die from.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, Jerry, it's not something to play with, that's for sure. It's not a toy. We have to be very careful in our investigation so that nobody gets hurt.
Cliff, you've been nice enough to come on the air with us, but you've got to give us a real meaty investigation that you're working on, or somebody's working on in the organization. I know there's something happening out there.
Jerry, the one that I think is of significance was the gentleman in the southeast, and I don't know how much of this information I'm allowed to give because anonymity and locations and that type of thing are sometimes
I understand.
Anonymous.
We don't want to be hardcore about this, Clifford, but come on. We want to know as much as possible. Can you tell us?
Okay. Well, this gentleman was barking, and he went out on the back porch, and he saw this object very close and very low, just over the right over by around the tree level. And it kind of bothered him, so he was going to go back inside, I believe, to get a camera. And as he bent over to get there, this object shot a ray of light over onto him and the house. And it did have some effects and burnings on him. He reported it. Now, the strange thing about this is, I'm just going to say it was on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
we were going to be there Sunday morning for our star team for the interview. Before we got there, two men dressed in black
okay.
showed up at the door, and the guy let him in and talked to him, and he said only one of them talked. He assumed that it was the MUFON, our star team investigators.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't show any credentials or badges or that type of thing. They investigated it, and they wanted to know if he had pictures, and he said no, he didn't, and then they said, okay, well, we'll leave. So they did leave, and then our MUFON people came. Now, the very good thing about this is it changed our protocol for investigations, Jerry, and this is important for all of us. MUFON has said, we will show you our cards and our ID cards and confirm who we are when we get there. Anybody else comes and they don't have those credentials, it's not from MUFON. So that now has been implemented just at that time. So we have to make sure that our people, their anonymity is protected if they want, and that we are identified as the investigators coming to talk to them about the sighting.
Wow. Do you have any idea who the men in black were? Probably the government.
Well, yeah, they were. I'm sorry. I hate to be secretive, Jerry. But it appears that they were from a government agency.
Okay.
We do know who it is that they the car license plates were assigned to, but I'm not at liberty.
Clifford, I wonder how they knew about it. I mean, the government. I wonder how they found out.
We don't know, Jerry.
Sounds like somebody's listening to MUFON phone calls.
They may be.
How is the relationship with MUFON and the government? I mean, do you guys talk to each other?
Well, they never respond to us. They don't seem to acknowledge us. We can never get to talk to any of the people that might. We're always filtered out before we can get to them. I really have no problem with the secrecy, some of the secrecy the Air Force has maintained, because it probably is protecting our national security. But I think it's also an overkill, too.
Yes. I agree with you.
Yeah, they do need to protect.
So MUFON and the secret agent types of the federal government, you guys aren't talking to each other, huh? Well, how do you feel about all of that? It seems to me there should be an open line of communication. It looks like they'd be interested in knowing what you guys know, and vice versa. I'm certainly interested.
Amazing and outstanding if we could get an open line of communication. We usually get people that have retired and they are out of the military, and then they start disclosing stuff. We'd like to have one-on-one with the U.S. Air Force or the Navy or whoever it might be that has information about this. We could help them. They could help us.
But as far as you know, it's not.
It doesn't seem to work that way, no matter who we talk to.
Well, what about the FAA? I mean, I just heard a deal. They're turning the reports over to you or somebody.
Well, we've been trying. I met with some senators from Colorado to see if we couldn't be the reporting person for the FAA on the UFO phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
anything that the traffic controllers might find, and that was a very difficult situation. And that's my understanding that I don't know if BASS, Bigelow Aerospace, is still getting the reports, but they were at one time supposed mm-hmm. to be reported to them. And I think maybe it still is, but we would sure like to be able to be the ones that get the FAA reports.
Seems to me that the major problem here is communication with somebody that can make a decision. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that, you know, that's in any business. Sometimes the secretary is the one that makes the decision.
<That's true. laughs>
But as a rule, it's the higher ups, and they are very They're very secretive about stuff.
Well, whether it's a government job or a corporate job or whatever, you're going to find people protecting each other to keep their job.
That's right. That's exactly right.
We're almost out of time. You want to bring anything else up about MUFON?
Well, Jerry, I don't know what else. I do appreciate all of the people that have joined MUFON and are supporters of our program. I know that we don't do it exactly right for everybody, but we try to do it right for the majority.
Well, as far as I know, MUFON has pretty good esprit de corps. You guys are pretty proud of your organization as a whole.
I think so. I think so. We have a really good bunch of investigators, and our board of directors is the good business sense. And that's what it takes. That's one of the reasons I'm ID is because of my business background. And it's things that we have to do to make sure we're a viable organization.
Clifford Cliff, the new international director for MUFON, thanks for coming on. I've enjoyed it.
Jerry, thank you so much for your interviewing me, and I appreciate that. MUFON does, and we look forward to working with you whenever we can.
Well, we want to stay in contact and keep those open lines of communication.
Exactly, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a good day.
Okay, bye.
Bye.